Failure is not an option.
What difference at this point does it make?
Nobody said it was going to be fun.
This is Real Talk, a fearless, poignant, and intrepid show where truth speaks louder than words. This is Real Talk with your host, Audrey Russo.
The shame, not of this world, so we live on the run. We keep our eyes set, on what is to come.
It happened before. It will happen again. It's just a question of when.
Time's a luxury we don't have.
Hi, everyone. It's Carrie Lake. You're listening to Audrey Russo on Real Talk Radio.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. As we have hit our 250th year of freedom, does the change we are seeing from our rear view alarm us? And are we more or less free from our founding? Well, we're going to discuss this and more with my next guest. Andrew Malcolm is a veteran national and foreign correspondent who has covered news and politics since 1968. He spent almost a decade as communications director for the governor of Montana, then as deputy communications manager of the first George W. Bush presidential campaign and Laura Bush's press secretary. In addition to a regular column at redstate.com, he is the longtime Tuesday co-host of the Ed Morrissey Show at sister site hotair.com. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome back to Andrew Malcolm.
Thank you. Thanks, Andrew. Thanks, everybody. It's good.
That's a standing O, because it's been a long time, too long since you've been on with the show.
I haven't said a word. I haven't said a word. I should quit now.
Don't worry. More applause comes later. So thank you. It's so great to have you back with us, Andrew.
Oh, it's great. It's great to be back. And we ended up in the same part of the country.
Isn't that funny? Yeah. Beautiful Tennessee. We'll do a little ad for it in a minute. Anyway, so it's the semi-quintessential of the celebration of 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence, or the greatest breakup letter ever. Also, it also happens to be the bicentennial of the deaths of two of the great founders, John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, who died, of course, 200 years ago on July 4th. Now, let's say, compared to our bicentennial, what differences have you observed?
I think the country is. You know, old people, of which I've discovered I'm one, but we always think that the world is falling to pieces. I don't. I think it's a wonderful place with great strengths and will endure for a long time as long as we take care of it like a garden. But I think the country since 1976 it's louder, it's more crude. Crasser is one thing. There's a lot of traditional values, which I don't find are being honored anymore. it's a problem. One of the things that I wrote about recently is that we don't seem to study American history much anymore.
No.
And I think we in my time, we had, I think, 3 years in prep school. But I think they're lucky to get a year now, and I don't know how well it's taught. You understand much better having understood, having learned the past. And it's not that it's repetitive, but you understand where people come from, where problems come from, how problems get solved. And we had in 1976, we elected Jimmy Carter, and that was kind of a he brought in the Malays. He talked about the Malays, and it was. And then, you know, the morning came again. Remember that wonderful Ronald Reagan ad, "Morning in America." That was 1984, but Reagan brought it back in 1980 with a sense of optimism. And there's one party in the country now which can see only problems.
Yeah,
that's all there is. And the country is fractured. They say it's hyper-partisan. It's got all these problems. And of course, we've always had problems.
Of course.
But it's not any worse than any other time, and we're not even in a world war. So, we didn't have World War XI. So, we're doing pretty well.
I just caught that, World War XI. Yeah, one of the geniuses on the Democrat Party said that. Go ahead.
Yeah. The comedian Nate Bargatze, who's also from Tennessee, he says we're doing great. He said, just take a look at the other planets. You know, they're pretty much done, we're rolling along doing pretty well.
Yeah.
It's true. And I'm not selling him at all, but he's a. He's a bright spot. You know, we've had comedians that come out and the foulest stuff you can imagine.
Right.
Which I've heard, and I've laughed at some of it. But he comes out and he's mainly making fun of himself. We don't have a lot of self-deprecation in America anymore.
No.
That's kind of too bad. So I think it seems to me rougher in the country now, but it's still the most wonderful place on earth. Yeah. Both the diversity of geography and people and cultures, it's all everywhere you are. It has that diversity, and I've traveled an awful lot is my work as a newspaper correspondent overseas and nationally. So I kind of come to know the place. And when you see all this stuff on social media during the World Cup about Europeans discovering that America is not the grim, angry place.
No.
I love that video about it. Yeah, isn't that wonderful? Yeah. It's just they're discovering things like free refills. Such a thing.
Think about that. Think about that. Yeah, they were sold a lie. Sold a lie about
it. But it's the kind of and that's the kind of thing like having a visitor. They are visitors, so who sees things that you know, but sees them through different glasses. And it's a joy to them, and it makes you realize what we have here. I mean, this is a wonderful, wonderful place, and there are a lot of angry people who are angry. You know, politics after TV came in the early 50s or 48, politics became more about appearances than substance, They can play on these. They play on the anger. Remember that wonderful picture of John Edwards before a debate, fixing his coif, brushing his hair, and admiring himself in the camera. You know, you don't picture Herbert Hoover or William McKinley or Teddy Roosevelt bothering to do any of that stuff, or Abe Lincoln.
that's funny. Yeah,
television is a wonderful thing. You know, I agree with it. I've enjoyed it very much. Mainly sports nowadays, but it has affected a lot of our institutions, and it play people then play to it. You ever see the camera pan over a football game on a college Saturday?
Yeah.
You see, when the people in the stand see the camera, they all start getting goofy. It's like an instant plague hitting people, all doing things, waving, making faces, and that's what TV does. Well, it does the same thing in politics. And so people in politics play to that. And therefore, there's a lot of anger, a lot more anger, I think, than is genuine.
Yeah.
Or real. And we have to remember that this is such a special place. And all these visitors from Europe and Asia coming and discovering the wonders of America.
Yeah.
It makes me feel good.
It does. I was really encouraged to hear they were saying, oh my gosh, I've been told all my life what a terrible place this was. And I love America.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, they love the freedom. They love the, you know, why they've been lied to. It's just even in places that were supposed to be, you know, democracies, they don't want, they slowly but surely have been implementing socialism, and we know Vladimir Lenin says the goal of socialism is communism. So eventually we know where that's going. So of course they don't want people to want what we have here. So they tell them we're a horrible place and they had no plans of coming here. Well, hello. They call it football, we call it soccer. They come here and they're like, oh my gosh, it's like a wonderland. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
You've been lied to.
Yeah, exactly. It's so friendly. There was a couple I saw online. I think they were from Scotland or England who were driving from somewhere to somewhere. They were driving through Alabama. And they stopped in a little town not far from me and to eat at a diner. And everyone was so friendly. And they recorded then a video in their car afterwards. Everyone was so friendly and suggesting foods they try. And they gave them a free dessert. And they were all impressed. And then the owner came out and met them. And he comped their whole meal.
Whoa.
Because they were from abroad and he wanted them to like America. And they said, just as you did, what a different America we are learning. So you have to remember that news is conflict, usually.
Yes.
And conflict is, for television, it needs to be visual. So you need fire, you need a lot of angry shouting, and you need to exaggerate on TV. Like I said, you see how goofy the people get in the football stands. Well, the same thing happens in politics. These stupid little photo ops that they do outside the Capitol.
Oh, gosh.
And waving and holding up signs. And I mean, they all do it because they're trying to show somebody that they're doing something. What they're doing is they're going to announce something they want to do.
Yeah.
They never end up doing it, but they announce it, and that's considered news. It's the easy thing to cover. If you're in Washington, you go to somewhere, you set up your camera, guy comes out and talks, you ask a couple of questions, then you pack it up and go back, and that's a nice day's work. Well, or if you're in California, the head of a network news told me once, he said he was assigned to L.A., to run an L.A. station. And he said he couldn't figure out what is everybody interested in. Because, you know, L.A. is a huge place, or any city is a big place. But it's a huge place with such different cultures and interests and economies. And he said, and the only thing that unites them is crime. and sports and the weather. So guess what? And traffic. So guess what you get? Crime, sports, weather, and traffic. And so people think, well, that's the state of the world. It's right. not. It's no. not at all. No. But they're there to make, to draw eyes. The more eyes they get, the more money they get from advertisers. And it's true. You know, if you live in a neighborhood, does everybody talk about the family with four kids that's paying their mortgage and getting along beautifully in the church? No.
No.
They talk about the couple they hear yelling through the window at night. It's conflict, and that's what makes, quote, news. But if that's all you have, you get a distorted idea of where we live and how we're living.
That's true, and it's we need that balance to realize, no, there, yeah, that exists, but the majority of the people don't feel that way. The Democrat Party, or the Communist Democrat Party, as I put it, they are really a minute. Why do you think they want illegals to vote? They are they lost a good deal of their base, so they're desperate to stay in power. All they care about is power. They don't care about anything else. But they're a minute minority. The majority of the country was celebrating on July 4th, because we are now in our 250th year. And so I tell you, as we all who appreciate and thank God for America, there were, of course, the America haters, and were out there on Meanie Wass. Say it's on Moss, on Weenie Moss. Of course, Mom Donnie, which I'm still just heartbroken that what happens with New Yorkers, I know because I was one. If they don't like the candidates, they just don't go out to vote. So who went out to vote? The ones who were on the college campuses, the Nimrods who were going to follow whatever the Democrat Party says. Because it was not a high turnout for Mom Donnie, but there he is. And he is. Yes, I'm sorry.
Sorry. And oh, by the way, there's a million foreign born Muslims now living in New York.
Oh, what a surprise. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're going to vote. They're going to make sure that they vote. And this is who they are, and I wish the president would stop calling him a communist. He's a Muslim, and they are communist principles fit right in, okay? Because the Muslims are using the communists are using the Muslims. Both of them think they're going to win out over the other. I'd love to see how that's going to work out. Let's put them in a ring and see what happens. Mom Donnie takes opportunity to blast America on July 4th with a speech focused on flaws. This is what they do, just what you said, flaws. Nothing good to say, just what his Muslim Marxist tiny gray matter could muster. Mom Donnie retold the history of the United States as an unending parade of horrors, an unwelcoming autocracy ruled by the wealthy and powerful. There couldn't be anything further from the truth, because I don't know, he's never cracked a book, I'm sure. Even the mass migration into Ellis Island, which is really insulting because that's where my grandparents came through, was turned into a parable of the oppressed. Then you had...
This is somebody who came here this century from Uganda and is going to give us a lecture on what it means to be American.
Yeah, exactly. Then, and lying about our history. Then you had Bruce, I wish I had some talent, Springsteen, making up a euphemism for being unpatriotic. He says, it's just critical patriotism. Right. Springsteen has an extensive history of being a massive lib, routinely dumping on America, Trump, conservatives, and anything else a large portion of his fan base probably supports. Austin Perry of OutKick says, no one who that is that outspoken about how much he hates people who love this country should be gracing your July 4th playlist anytime soon. And I agree with that. And I wouldn't anyway, because he stinks. But I was thinking, if they loathe this great nation so much, then why don't we start a give, send, go for them to have a one-way ticket anywhere that any other country they think is so much better than ours. What do you think?
Why did they come? Well, I mean, you know why they came.
We know why they came.
Well, you know, but this is disgusting.
Yeah.
And it's new, so it gets a lot of attention. But if you go back to 2009, was a guy named Barack Obama who got elected president in 8. Millions of Americans placed their trust in him.
Yeah.
He called himself a racial mongrel one time, but basically considered a black man. Yeah. They placed their trust in a black man, the first black man to be elected president of the United States.
I thought that was Bill Clinton.
And one of the first things he did was go on a global tour.
Yeah.
Around the world to apologize for the country that had just placed its trust in him.
Yeah, there you go.
All the things that we had done wrong. Now, that's what you just said about Mamdani on July 4th.
Yeah.
So this is not new. It's a cancer.
Yeah.
And it comes in different forms. We always portray evil as this scary thing. It's not really. Evil comes in as a handsome or beautiful,
right?
Attractive thing. Ronald Reagan warned about that.
Yeah.
And we have evil in the world, and they're trying not to make America better.
No,
that's not the goal.
Yeah, it's a lie when they say that. Yeah, it's a lie.
Yeah, the goal, that's the cover story. That's what they call themselves, democratic socialists. It's communism, plain and simple.
Absolutely.
And their goal is not to make it better, to improve things. It's to take over because, as you say, they want power. And that's why we lived through the horror of the Biden years when we had a man who couldn't handle a screen door as commander-in-chief with access to the nuclear launch codes. This is not, they voted him in 2020. I guess some people disagree with that, but the system said that he won. And we knew then that he was not all there.
Right.
Remember that dog you called a college girl, lying dog-faced pony soldier. Nobody knows what that means, but this comes out of the mind of an old mind that was fading. And you saw nurses escorting Biden out of events straight to the car where he couldn't meet with media. And a lot of us suspected, but we didn't really see it. A lot of people didn't see it until 55 million watched that debate on, June 28th in 2024 or 27th, where he just lost it. His mind went away. Well, we had example. I work for Red State. I write for Red State now. We covered that all over the place. We had pictures that were taken over his shoulder of his notes telling him to sit in the empty chair, to say hello, to say thank you.
Yeah.
And remember, he gave a speech and he asked for, where was Jackie something or other? And it was a congresswoman that had died a month before in a car accident. Yeah. So this stuff was going on all the time, and the media didn't really cover it. They mentioned it deep, but it was there. It was shocking, and you couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of people think it was Jill Biden who was president. Anyway, when
that's
she
even scarier.
Exactly.
She likes to call herself doctor.
You know, Weekend with Bernie. It was. To think that that person. And then, of course, Nancy Pelosi, without any votes, replaces him with, as on the 2024 Democrat ticket, with Kamala Harris.
Right.
Because get this, because he's not able to be president in a second term. Okay,
mm-hmm.
That was in July.
Yeah.
So wait, you're not capable of being president after next January 20? What about now? That was the deal. They gave Biden to drop out. Well, you can stay president, finish your term. But that's the country. The country didn't have a coherent, cognitive commander in chief.
Yeah, he wasn't running things.
Gone.
Yeah,
he wasn't doing anything.
No,
and the auto pin and so on, and then a year later, we get books from journalists who knew it all, but they're making extra money now, saying, "Well, now I can be told." Well, why wasn't it told? The journalists got constitutional protection from the founding fathers because they were important watchdogs of government.
Not anymore.
Both ways. Yeah. Both ways. Not just watchdogs of when Republican. Perhaps you've noticed, Audrey, that whenever a Republican president comes in, suddenly the homeless problem is terrible.
Yeah. Otherwise, they're silent about. Of course, it's.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's. Yeah.
But a disgrace.
A few of them. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a disgrace.
But it's the same sort of thing. Corruption. Well, corruption. Hello. We have Hunter Biden last weekend giving lectures about conflict of interest in the Trump administration.
Yeah.
Hunter Biden, whose father flew him to Beijing on the U.S. government plane, vice president's plane, so that Hunter could make his business deals, his nefarious business deals with Japanese interests, with Chinese interests, while his father was doing business with the leader.
Yeah, think about that.
And then Joe Biden tells us, "Well, we never talked about business."
Yeah, right.
Right. So Hunter Biden is going to give us lectures. The dope addict,
artist,
alcoholic, influence peddling guy who had an affair with his brother's widow, the deadbeat dad. So there's that to keep in mind, and I was hoping that they would leave, but they're like the Clintons. They stick around. They can't give it up. And every president leaves Washington except Obama.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's still living there. And he's this is the guy who warned us that the ocean levels are going to go up 6 or 7 feet.
Yeah.
And two of his three houses are on the beach.
We remember all, they just hope that most people are stupid, so that they are
you're right. People aren't stupid, they're inattentive.
That's it.
Okay.
That's
they
it.
They walk through the living room, the television's on, they hear a snippet of biased network news. And they think that's it. There's not, the internet is, and don't get me going on this, but I'm going to anyway. The internet is a wonderful thing because it's competitive with the traditional media that have become corrupt and biased. However, it requires readers now.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't just pick up your local newspaper and feel like you got the news or watch Walter Cronkite. You have to shop for the news, and you have to triangulate. You got this side from this side and this side from the other side, and you've got to think about it. And I don't think there's many people
that do that,
unfortunately, who do that. So they take one side, and that's the truth. And if you don't study history, if you don't study history, if you're young people, you think the world started with you.
It's true.
You don't know that the world started long before you, and that what you think is new is ancient. My favorite story about history is, the wheel was invented 3,500 years before Christ. And wheels on luggage were not invented until 1976.
What? Yeah.
We put them on trucks, we put them on chariots, but nobody thought to put them on heavy suitcases for 5,000 years.
Does that make any sense? Yeah. Okay. But it's anyway, true. And in this 250th year of freedom, the least, listeners, the least we can do is least find out the truth about our founding and not listen to what somebody that, like Mom Donnie, who came here 7 or 8 years ago, who doesn't know his hoo-ha from his elbow. We need to at least do that. At least you could do that for freedom, because let me tell you something, the founders lost everything to give us this place. And as Benjamin Franklin said after he came out, after they had signed it, what do we have? He said, well, we have a republic if we can keep it. So it's up to us to keep it.
Exactly.
Either we keep it or we lose it. And once we lose it, we don't get it back. Can't vote it back in.
I can just recommend books. There's a trilogy.
Yes.
Three books by the historian, the late historian, Daniel Boorstin, Boorstin. It's the best books I have. They are the best books I've ever read. It's a trilogy of American history, the colonial experience, the national experience, the democratic experience. You can get them. I know I got several sets and gave them to each one of my children at Abe Books, like Abe Lincoln, abebooks.com. It's a used book site, but you can get them there very inexpensively. But I really recommend that people read them. They are social histories, not just who was president for this long and what they fought about in Congress, but how our institutions developed, where Memorial Day came from, why we honor mothers and fathers. Where did that come from?
Right.
The sense of veterans. What's all this with the veterans? The sense of we haven't had 11 world wars.
Right.
It teaches us where institutions like the department stores come from.
Right.
Why do we have mail order? How do we have a postal system? It's fascinating to see as the country evolved. Right. These were challenges that inventors, inventive Americans, invented. Can I just tell a quick anecdote? Because I hope this will hook people.
Okay.
There was a guy, railroad package agent in a station in Minnesota. This is a lot in the 1800s. And a big package came, and it sat there. No one picked it up. It sat there for months. So he finally opened it up. It was full of watches. Pocket watches in those days, full of watches. He said, well, what am I going to do with this stuff? So he put them out and started to sell them in his spare time. And they went like a flash. And he said, well, why are they going like a flash? Well, he's in a railroad station. Trains are on schedule. They didn't used to have schedules, right? Because to take a horse from one town to another, it could be a half hour difference on the clocks over there. Nobody cared. But to have a standard time in a country when you have railroads linking everything together. So he bought a whole bunch of watches and started traveling on trains selling watches. And guess what his name was?
What?
Alva Sears.
Oh,
and he then, yeah,
oh, wow.
And then he said he started selling other things.
Wow,
Sears Roebuck and the Sears catalog.
Oh my God!
And that's how that institution developed. And then because they had this big business like that, the government said, "Well, we really need to have mail service for the country, the whole country, not just the city, because until 1900 or so, you had to go into town to get your mail."
Sure.
So they invented rural free delivery, RFD. You could get mail brought to your house in the country.
Wow.
When I was a kid, the mail was delivered 7 days a week. Yeah. Well, that's changed. But anyway, this is the kind of history that Daniel Boorstin tells, and you walk away from it saying, now I understand how my society and my city works.
Yeah, or how it's supposed to work. It's supposed to work.
Yeah, exactly.
Answer
exactly.
Very important question. Yeah, very important question.
Exactly. Where
can the listeners? Yeah, where can the listeners follow and support your excellent work, including on social media? Where can they do that?
Well, I am on Twitter I guess you call it X. I don't. It's always Twitter. At A.H. Malcolm, M-A-L-C-O-L-M. I am on Facebook, A.H. Malcolm. And I am at redstate.com. And I write there a couple times a week, at least. It's a conservative site that I recommend highly. They have an author's page, and I'm right there, Andrew Malcolm. You can see everything I've written for them for the last many years. And now I'm actually on Audrey Russo's show again. I'm very proud. That's where you can hear me.
Oh, he's
and I
kind.
Hope you hear me again.
Here. Oh, you will. And as always, I will have all those links in my after show, which is now on the live show page. Just go to AudreyRusso.com. Click on the on air button, and right under the show description, you'll find all the links and info you need to follow Andrew's work. Thanks so much, Andrew, for sharing your brilliant assessments with us. Will you join us again on the show? Yes?
You betcha. Anytime you ask, Audrey. Thank you very much. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you. Until then, may God bless you, your work, and may God save America. Bye for now.
Yeah!